Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You are now entering a critical thinking zone. Thinking caps are required beyond this point. From deep behind enemy lines, deep in the heart of the Midwest, it's your host, Andrew Coppins. And it's time for Critical Thinking.
Welcome into Truth or Fiction Tuesday. I am Andrew Coppins. Alongside me is Mr. Pat Oney. You can follow us on social media. And you can know how to do that if you are watching on the Rumble page. Pat, I'm sorry, am I boring you already?
Yes, well, you are. Yes, you are.
We're 30 seconds into the show, man. 30 seconds in and I'm already boring you to death?
Yes.
And now some of you at home who are watching on the Rumble page, rumble.com/critical thinking, you might notice the background for me is a little bit different. And that's because it's hotter than the spirit of the age here in the Midwest. And my house is already at 73 degrees, Pat. And it is 7:30 in the morning Central Time as we record this?
Yeah. So come talk to me when you get to triple digits.
Oh, we're getting close to triple digits. Today, tomorrow, and Thursday. So, yeah.
Yep.
And also, did I mention 75-80% humidity? Did I mention that?
Yeah. See, that's the nice thing about living in the West.
Dry heat.
Yeah.
Rolling blackouts, though.
At least you get a chance of thunderstorms every day.
True. That is true. But yeah, it's a brutally hot one, and my normal background doesn't bode well when I have to crank the AC up. So yeah, new background for today. Let me know if you like it or not. I could potentially use this one long term. But anyway, it is a Truth or Fiction Tuesday, and you can follow us on social media. You know that drill by now. You can always go to criticalthinking.locals.com as well. And Pat, a brand new episode of Reviving Liberty drops today. Actually, it's already dropped this morning. So go to your favorite podcasting platform, check it out. Step 3 on your path towards a liberty mindset, towards living and reviving liberty. And it's Shine a Light. That is today's episode. We're going to talk about shining a light and what does that actually mean versus what a lot of people will think it means. So excited for that. Hope everybody enjoys Reviving Liberty. So please subscribe to that. You can go to revivingliberty.com, get all the information you need there. All of that wonderful goodness out of the way. Pat, do you want to go first on Truth or Fiction Tuesday this week?
If you would like me to, I can.
Sure.
Okay. Alrighty then. I think I'm going to start with this one. Truth or fiction. if Americans are saying the economy is doing poorly, it's because Joseph Marionette Biden is focused on the wrong things.
That is really, that is such a loaded question for me. Let me think for a couple of seconds on this one. I'm going to say fiction.
Okay. Why?
Because I don't think he's focused on the wrong things, per se. I just think he is an incompetent buffoon who doesn't know what to do. So what things could he focus in on that he isn't focused in on would be my rebuttal to the potential for this to be true. Because in my mind, what is he focused in on? He's focusing in on gas prices, right? I will say this. If you said he's doing the wrong things, you would be correct. That would be truth. But this is fiction because he's not he's not doing the wrong things or focused on the wrong things, I should say. He just doesn't know what to focus on. He doesn't know what he's doing. The old British soccer chant, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. And it's because we see monetary policy that is absolutely and utterly incompetent. I mean, let's put it this way. If we had competent leadership at any level, Janet Yellen would not be our Secretary of the Treasury, right? Janet Yellen, who literally stuck her head into the sand for a year and a half, and then oopsies came out of the sand as of what? May? Oh, what do you know? We have a different way of looking at these things now, and it's not transitory, and it's not this, and it's not that. It is utter incompetence. It's not focusing in on the wrong things. Like I guess, what should the president be focused in on that he isn't? Because for me, the kitchen table things are the things he should be focusing in on, right? The price of gas, the price of food, the price of this, the price of that. But the reality of the situation is that the president has little to no control over those things. The things that the president, the Secretary of the Treasury, the Federal Reserve, the government more broadly has control over are monetary policies and regulations, right? So for me, I look at that and go, he doesn't know what they should be focusing in on. It's not a missing target because politically, he's doing the smart thing. He's saying the rhetorically smart things, right? Like we're going to focus in on driving gas prices down. We're going to focus in on, you know, your food costs and blah, 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 blah. I could argue the incompetence also is in the messaging around that, right? He's acting as if a 25% or 25 cent decrease in gas, right? He's acting as if that is that's a win for the American people, except for we're still $2 above where we were when he was elected and inaugurated into the presidency of the United States of America. He is incompetent in messaging, even in the areas that he actually has nothing that he can affect. He has no control over the price of gas, none. Let's be real. Donald Trump has no control or had no control over the price of gas. This is the laws of supply, demand, and regulation. And the good things that Donald Trump did when it came to regulation were what? Allowing for more exploration of oil. We became a net exporter of oil. We stockpiled our reserves, which have been what? Depleted to about half of that level now under the Biden administration. You know, he's doing all the wrong things. He's messaging all the wrong things. But it's not that he's focusing in on the wrong things. Because as a president, whether you like it or not, you're going to get the blame for these kitchen table things, right? Even if you have no real control. Like, what is he supposed to do? Put his thumb on the scale? Like, that's the thing I don't understand about how the American public views these things, right? What is he supposed to do? We made fun of him for trying to put his thumb on the scale, right? Trying to imply that you dastardly corner, you know, Mobile station or Exxon station or Shell station or BP or Quick Trip or whatever, right? You dastardly corner store gas station owner, you're the one that's killing the American people. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't get it. It's incompetence. It's not for a lack of focusing on the wrong things, in my mind. What say you?
I would also say fiction for a lot of the same reasons. The president is not, you're right, the president is not in direct control over a lot of these things. But where this is coming from, and I just kind of want to go with this in detail a little bit and see if either of us change our answer. Okay. So the CNN SSRS poll polled more than 1,400 adults between June 13th and July 13th.
Okay.
And just over 2 in 10 Americans, so 21%, think things in this country are going well. Okay. However, 21% of the respondents said that things are going well compared to 79% who said things are going very badly. Just 1% of Americans said things were going very well. 20% said things are going fairly well. On the opposite end of the spectrum, 34%.
Hang on a second. So that what, 22%? 22% believe things are going very well or fairly well? Well,
yeah.
Can I meet that 21%?
Yeah, I would. See, that's the thing is, I would like to as well.
Because I don't even think it's like, even if you, so even if you were a leftist, right, and you wanted to support Biden ardently through and through, you still have the, you know, kitchen table issues of abortion, gun control, all those things that you think isn't going very well. Am I missing something here?
Well, and I'm just sitting here wondering, like, okay, of that 22%, I mean, what, first of all, what are your political leanings? Secondly, how, you know, what is, how is inflation and the economy and all the issues therein right now affecting you around your kitchen table versus the other 79%? Okay. That's what I would want to know. And that's why I don't like this poll, because to me, there's more nuance to it than what this poll is suggesting. I mean, my wife and I were actually talking about this last night when we were putting in a grocery order and just how expensive things have gotten. Mm-hmm. And what this administration is doing about it. Now, granted, we've said this administration can't really do much about it. No president can. But the problem is there are a lot of economic policies that this administration has done that have trickled down into these things.
Yeah, I mean, the greatest example of that is the deceleration of leases, right? The day one policies of stopping the Keystone XL pipeline. And yes, I get it. That does not affect your gasoline that goes into your car your truck or your SUV or whatever, right? I understand that. Right. The Keystone XL pipeline is not about that type of oil. But it's not just that. It is the loss and lock of land leases. It's the, you know, it's all the things that they did 2 years ago that have hadn't exacerbated the problem. Like, it is their inability to think critically and forward thinking. It is their inability to understand the implications of the policies and the trade-offs that can happen, right? It is almost as if ideology matters more than reality. And we can see that in the incessant push of electric vehicles, and we've talked about that. We've talked about the lack of the infrastructure to make this work more broadly. We have talked about the lack of the ability to produce enough batteries, by the way. If we took every car off the road and replaced it with an electric vehicle, right? If that was the goal, if that's what we were doing, we do not have the ability to produce enough lithium batteries in this entire world to do so. We have none. It is an infinite supply. It is not an infinite supply, I should say. It's a finite supply. We do not have, cannot find right now enough lithium ion, okay? Enough of the precious metals and the precious resources to produce enough batteries at a quality level, by the way, to do so, let alone the other infrastructure needs, let alone the inability for us to be able to quick charge a vehicle. You know, we've had reporters, right, who have done trips from, I think, Chicago to New Orleans and back, right? We've had people try to do a cross-country trip from, I think, Washington, D.C. to California. And they'll never do it in an EV again. Why? Because the infrastructure is not there to allow them to easily do it the way that we're used to doing it. In order for the American people to do these things, we have to realize that we have to change the infrastructure. We can't even have a conversation, Pat, around changing the infrastructure and enhancing our infrastructure around our electric grid in this country. We haven't done a thing in 20 years, despite the fact that we know that we're very vulnerable in our electric grid. We've war gamed this out. It is very easy for our opponents, if they wanted to attack us, they don't need to do anything. They don't even have to land ashore. Just attack our electric grid. It is super vulnerable because our leaders are in that case, focused in on the wrong things. We're focusing in on the wrong things as a society. I will agree on that. Okay.
But I would also, I mean, if we're going to go down that route, I think it would be more accurate to say that it wouldn't be just the Biden administration.
Right. And that's my point is that,
right.
But at every level, right, along all right. of these potential pratfalls of our society, they tend to go on the side of the what we're going to do will negatively impact you. That's incompetence. That is not focusing in on the wrong thing.
Right.
And that's my point when it comes to this. Now,
right. And by the way, I asked this question intentionally the way that I did, because if I were to say truth or fiction, you know, this administration is handling things incompetently. I mean, we've already talked about that.
Ad nauseum. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the most incompetent. And I will say this out loud. The dumbest presidency of all time. This is literally the most incompetent presidency I have ever seen. I what you doing around every corner and around every issue? They managed to screw it up.
There's a reason why the Obama administration kept Joe somewhat quiet throughout his entire presidency. There's a reason for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just fail to understand how anybody sees us on the right track or going fairly well or whatever. I mean, even in the housing industry, right? Even in my industry, while things are still going pretty robust, things are changing, and it'll be interesting. Like I'm having the best year I've ever had so far. Monetarily, but that doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't mean much if the cost of everything has gone up 15-20%. I mean, to your point earlier about groceries and the kitchen table, I mean, I looked at one of the grocery stores here as we picked up groceries on Sunday, and oh, hey, a pound of hamburger is down to 4-something on sale. You know what I mean? Like, hey, that's a great thing.
I mean, where we notice it the most is in eggs and the price of milk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's absolutely insane.
Now, I think we've beaten that horse to death by now. The incompetence, not the focus in on the wrong things. Because we can walk and chew gum at the same time. But I have a truth or fiction for you, Pat. truth or fiction, we are headed to a real national divorce in America.
You know, we've talked about this a little bit before. We've hypothesized what would happen, what could happen before. And I think I've even said that this would be more of a truth thing before as well. It's always kind of a hard one to say whether or not this is actually going to be truth or fiction in the long run. But if I had to guess right now, I'm going to say truth, but part of me wants to say fiction, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
Okay.
I'm going to say truth because of the spirit of the age, because of the cultural war that we're in. Because I really feel like we have come to a point in this country where the values and even the principles of whatever ideology you lean towards are so different from the opposite that you can't share a society with the other. It doesn't work. It's almost like you cannot coexist with that other side anymore because we don't have a basic framework, value system, or a set of principles that we can all at least center around. Not saying that we don't disagree on certain issues or how things are handled in certain ways. I'm not suggesting that at all. But there has to be like this like general framework that we all are centered around. And we aren't anymore. We just aren't. Now, the part of me that wants to say that this is fiction is we look at what our government is doing right now, what this administration is doing right now, and some of the divisiveness that has come out of this administration. And, you know, you've got inflation and the economy hitting everybody. It doesn't matter what your affiliations are, what your ideology is. This is negatively impacting everyone, period. Mm-hmm. Okay. If there was ever going to be something that could unite the country right now, it's that. And that would be the reason why we wouldn't have a national divorce. But I don't know. I don't know that the spirit of the age and the cultural war that we're in gives a flying flip about that at the end of the day. And that's why I would ultimately say truth.
Interesting. I ultimately say truth as well. And I bring this up because the state of New Hampshire. Looks like it is going to become, and it has a very high likelihood, to declare independence from the United States of America.
New Hampshire.
Yep.
You're dead serious about this.
They have a new bill. Now, this bill has come up in the past and has been voted down. But from what I have heard from little birdies on the ground in New Hampshire, this has a real chance of passing this time around. It is in the 2022 session, a constitutional amendment concurrent resolution number 32 relating to independence. All right. So it is a very simple resolution. Providing that the state peacefully declares the independence from the United States and proceeds as a sovereign nation. And this has multiple sponsors in the New Hampshire legislature. And I bring this up and I'm talking about national divorce because New Hampshire is, right, the home of the Free State Project, right? And it's home of much more of a libertarian bent than anywhere else in the country.
Correct? I was going to say of all the New England states, New Hampshire is very different.
It is.
Hmm.
But what happens if they go ahead with secession, right? Secession. What happens? Is the American military going to come in and do what? Right? Like, this is the flashpoint, I think, for people to have this light bulb turn on in their own heads and really start to think about where we're headed. Because we are headed down a very dark, dark, dark path. And we've talked about this time and time again on the show. And that's the reason why I brought this up. What happens if New Hampshire says, no, we're good, peace out? We live in a country called the United States of America, correct?
Correct.
Meaning, I would guess that a state has the ability to say yes or no. In fact, Texas literally has that written into their constitution, their state constitution. They hold the right to say yes or no to being a member of the United States of America.
Which is what is so interesting about this, because I thought, I would have thought Texas would have been one of the first states to do this, not New Hampshire.
Yeah, but New Hampshire has a much more liberty-minded individuals. Like, Texas is different in they just voted Greg Abbott back into the Republican. So in the Republican primary at 75%, right? They voted Greg Abbott, 75%. Greg Abbott is as close in Texas to John Cornyn as you could get, right? He forced lockdowns. He did all of these other things. He is about as left as you can get when you become a Republican in the state of Texas. And yet 75% of the people in the GOP said, yes, more Greg Abbott, please.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
They're not liberty-minded in Texas. They really aren't. There are pockets of that. But by and large, it is get along to get along in the state of Texas. And so I asked this question because what happens if New Hampshire does pass this resolution? What is the United States government going to do? Are they going to enforce them being part of some sort of compact? Like, where in the Constitution does it say you cannot ever not become a part of what we are? Because it's literally written in, and this is the conversation that I've had in my own head. Because on the one hand, I see the point of you agreed to become part of the United States of America. On the other hand, it is the United States of America, and we have a Declaration of Independence that tells us if a government is abusing its powers and abusing its people, we have the right to dissolve the ties that bind us.
And put new guards into place.
Exactly. And put new guards into place. So what do we do? What do we do as a society when these things are happening?
Well, furthermore, my question would be, if this succeeds in New Hampshire, how long before other states follow suit?
I don't know. And I guess that is the ultimate question here, right? Because I don't think if New Hampshire does this by themselves, it's going to mount to a hill of beans. But I do know that if they do this and it is the impetus for other places to do it, I could see Arizona going down this route. I could see potentially a Florida.
Utah could be in that conversation as well, though I don't know that we would at the end of the day.
Yeah, because Utah has a very different history when it comes to the federal government, right? I could see a North Dakota. I could see a Minnesota. From a different perspective, they could do this from, because Minnesota has always had this very weird independent streak, and its state politics are really weird. Like, there is no – did you know that the Democratic Party actually doesn't exist in the state of Minnesota?
I actually did know that, but I did know that they're – politics and the way that they do things there are actually quite weird.
Yeah, it's like it's called the Minnesota Democratic Farmers Party or something like that. The way that these things have to be registered is really weird. Minnesota's weird, period. But I could see a state like Iowa potentially looking at independence. I could see a North or South Dakota looking that direction. I could see an Idaho looking that direction, right? There's a lot of states that have this independent spirit within them. And is that the spark of that independent spirit? At what point have the ties that bind us been broken? Is a question that I think a lot of people are going to have to reckon with over the coming years. And I'm not suggesting that Ron DeSantis is the answer, or this person, you know, or Donald Trump getting back into office is the answer that will quell these things, because it's a spirit. It is a liberty-minded, principled stance to say, hang on a second. You know, we're still going down an authoritarian path here, and I don't want any part of it.
Right. And interestingly enough, you mentioned a liberty-minded spirit. And the thing is, no politician, no person, no human person can undo, I think, what's happening in front of our eyes. We cannot rely on – there is Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, they're not going to save us, period. Not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the only way that I could see it happening is if the Department of Ag, the Department of Energy, the Department of Education, the EPA, the CDC, all of these alphabet soup organizations are, see you later. Good luck getting through that bureaucracy, because it's been so entrenched. But I'll save part of that argument for another day. My overarching point here is that I do think at some level a national divorce is coming. And I think we're already seeing it, because people are migrating where? How does Florida go from being as purple as purple can get, right, to the point where literally hanging chads mattered in a 2000 election, to this last election where it was less than half of a percent between him and between Ron DeSantis and Andrew Gillum, who now, in less than a year after that election, decided to do gay hookers and blow. Right.
Right.
So think about that. Less than a half a percent between Ron DeSantis and gay hookers and blow guy, to now having a 1.5 million registration advantage in that state. Ron DeSantis in less than 2 years has basically taken the purplest state, the most swing of all states in this union, to the reddest state. How does that happen? When you dump a ton of people into the state over the course of a pandemic, who see the freedom that was given, quote unquote, given, or more importantly, just allowed to happen for the most amount of people in that state possible. You dumped a ton of people who believe in liberty and freedom into the state over the course of the last 2 years. And with that, why don't we move on here, Pat? Because I think it is time for us to play the bee or not the bee. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right. So today's headline. Fauci says he's planning to retire by the end of Biden's term. Fauci says he's planning to retire by the end of Biden's term. Is this the bee or not the bee? And while you're thinking about that, again, folks, please, 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 join the liberty-minded movement. Join Reviving Liberty. Go to revivingliberty.com. Like we have said throughout this episode, a brand new Reviving Liberty episode dropped this morning. So subscribe away on whatever podcasting platform you have. It is a movement. It is meant for you to focus in on yourself and your family, and putting yourself on an intentional liberty-mindsetted pathway in your own life. And today's episode is about shining a light. It's about exposing the other side, if you will, the spirit of the age and its works and its vessels. But it's also about shining a light on liberty and shining a light on the good stories and the positivity of liberty. So go check that out. Revivingliberty.com is where you can find the episodes and where you can subscribe away if you need to or want to. But yeah, revivingliberty.com. And of course, thank you to our great sponsors at American Pride Roasters as well. American Pride Roasters in my cup this morning. A little at the mic, by the way, the Keith Malinak variety, the macadamia nut. variety in my cup this morning. With that having been said, Pat, do you need the headline one more time?
I don't think so, unless you've changed the headline somehow. This is likely going to be not to be.
You are correct. That's right. Fauci says he's planning to retire by the end of Biden's term. Lord, Savior, President, Dr. Anthony Fauci has just said in an interview that he plans to retire by the end of the Biden administration. Quote, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the chief medical, Lord, Savior, President, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the chief medical advisor to the White House, confirmed he will retire by the end of President Joe Biden's first term, but it could come much earlier than that, the infectious disease expert told Reuters in an interview on Monday. Quote, I haven't made an announcement of my retirement, but it could be anywhere from now until then, Fauci said in the telephone interview. I don't know yet. Along the lines of truth or fiction here, Pat, truth or fiction, our Lord, Savior, President, Dr. Anthony Fauci will retire as of November.
I'm going with truth. And the reason why I'm going with truth is because he sees the writing on the wall. And I think he, in his mind, he's thinking Republicans are going to come after me. Which, I mean, in some semblance, they already have. Now, say what you will on that, because we've seen Republicans go after people before and nothing happens. So I do see that as truth, and he's like, well, if I remove myself from the situation, they'll just leave me alone. Because I do honestly think he is sick and tired of having to deal with Rand Paul.
Yeah, because Rand Paul runs circles around him every time.
Right.
Because
right.
He comes with receipts every time.
Right. And so he doesn't want to go down for any of the scandals that he's been a part of over the last couple of years.
Right. Because if he's still a public official, right, he has to appear in front of them if they subpoena him. He can't not do that.
And then he no longer has to, I believe, if he's no longer there. Correct. So here's the kicker, though. Like if by some chance, you know, the Democrats retain control, he might stay. But he's not. I think he sees the writing on the wall, and that's why he's saying what he's saying. I also think he's saying 2024, Biden ain't winning. And if Biden ain't running in 2024, the Democrats ain't winning. And if Trump or DeSantis get into office, I'm really screwed. And so he's going to at least be out by the end of the Biden administration. So it really just depends on what happens politically in the country. On when his retirement date is actually.
Are you suggesting that our Lord, Savior, President, Dr. Anthony Fauci is a political animal and not a scientist, Pat? Are you suggesting that?
Yes, I am.
You bigot.
I'm not even suggesting it. I'm flat out saying it.
Yeah, yeah. And we haven't even talked about Deborah Birx yet and her admission. So maybe we'll do that tomorrow. But her basically falsifying federal documents and lying to the president of the United States to further a scientific agenda. We'll talk about that tomorrow, but I want to move on. We got each of us another truth or fiction to go here. So I'm going to start with this one. Truth or fiction, the Department of Education should not exist.
Truth. Absolutely truth. It is ridiculous. Why? I mean, my biggest thing is this: when it comes to the Department of Education, every state and how they address education within each state is very, very different. Mm-hmm. The way state government is set up in every state and how they impact education is very different. And then we have bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. that are sitting here saying, well, you have to do things in an X, Y, and Z kind of way, as if that works for every individual state and how they are set up. And on top of that, my wife would even agree with this too. She is sick and tired of bureaucrats that have never set foot in a classroom making decisions about her job and about what her kids are learning and not learning in school. So yeah, I absolutely agree that the Department of Education, on the at least on the federal level, is absolutely ridiculous and unnecessary and a waste of tax dollars.
And more importantly, where in the Constitution does it say that this can exist? And this is the moment in which, you know, the Steve Dace argument of we're a nation of political will, not laws, right? This is where this argument exists, because there's nowhere in the Constitution of the United States that says the federal government can control this. There's nowhere. Nowhere. No way, no how. It is only because we, the people, have allowed this to happen that it happens. Now, former Department of Education Secretary, right, the DOE Secretary, Betsy DeVos, has literally come out and said exactly your point. The Department of Education should not exist. She would know better than almost anybody whether or not this should exist, right?
Considering she was the Secretary of the Department of Education. Yeah.
Yep. Quote, I personally think the Department of Education should not exist. Period. That's as blunt of a statement as you can get. Now, in an exclusive interview, with the Daily Caller News Foundation, DeVos said that Republicans have talked about shrinking or eliminating the department for many, many years. However, she said taking practical steps like block grants to the states, which is a proposal recently introduced into Congress, could turn the tide and create a feasible option to make the idea a reality. I would argue, why are we block granting anything? Why not just leave the money where it's supposed to be, in the state? Why are you paying anything into a federal fund for education? Why? But more importantly, Betsy DeVos actually has a 5-point plan that she wants to implement. Did you know that?
I did not.
So, and she points out, though, also before we get into that, though, that the last 2 years of lockdowns and holding children hostage to political ideology and the idol of our Lord Savior President, Dr. Anthony Fauci, Deborah, I'm a criminal, Burks, and all those other individuals, holding them hostage to that shows that the system doesn't work. It doesn't work for the people it's supposed to work for. So she has a 5-point plan. Now, including one point is eliminating the Department of Education on a federal level. She also supports multiple pathways to a post K through 12 education. I think that's good. This one size fits all scenario of you have to go to college or you're a failure is ridiculous. We should be supporting with our tax dollars people being able to learn a trade. People should be able to not have to, like, the thing that I don't understand, right? If you wanted to become somebody who works inside of a startup and works in a tech world, and all you need to do is learn how to code or learn how to do data analysis, right? Why do I need the rest of the educational component? Why? I should be able to go to school for a year or two, be able to prove myself professionally and move on. Shouldn't matter. But multiple pathways to a post K through 12 education. She also believes that federal student aid should be reformed, which I agree with wholeheartedly. Because, and this is something I've talked to my wife about, when you take a look at the ultra rich, when you take a look at the richest of the rich, right? How do they stay rich? It's because they understand how to use debt. They understand how to use it. Not abuse it, but use it. And a great example of this is the federal student aid. They borrow as much as they possibly can in federal student aid, right? For their son or daughter's education. Correct, Pat?
Correct.
Because what do we know, and we've had this discussion on the show before, they're the largest component. That group of people makes up the largest component of the like trillion plus dollars of federal student loans that still need to be paid back. And why do they do it? Well, they can afford to send their kid to Harvard, right? They can afford. Well, they have figured out how to leverage debt. So, for instance, in this case, right, they're going to take that student loan. Why? Because that $30,000-$40,000 that they get in student loans, or that $10,000 that they get in student loan, right? That's $10,000 that they can free up to make money until they have to pay it back. So that $10,000 can then turn into $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 if it's invested correctly, or put into the right vehicles or the right mechanisms, right? They're leveraging debt. They understand how to use it to their advantage. A great example is this is people don't know what home equity is. They don't understand what equity is in their home or how to use it. It is literally being able to leverage debt or leverage your investment that you have already made in your home. Most people don't know how to do it. And so if we reform federal student aid to make it aid that people really do need, can use and get access to, that would be great. But that's not where we stand. She also believes in restoring Title IX. But educational freedom, the concept that we have talked about, the thing that has passed in Arizona, this idea that we're going to fund students, not systems, is the centerpiece of all of this. It is going back to focusing on the child. Because what we have done as we have grown all the dollars, right? The state of Illinois spends $15,000 per student as of 2020. $15,000. We spend more money per pupil in the United States of America than anywhere else in the world, and we get shit results for it. So we should, I believe, fund a student's education. I think it is in the public interest, in that social compact, to make sure that people who want to get an education can get one. I believe wholeheartedly that everybody should have some sort of access to at least up till the age of 18 an education. It can be up to the parent, can be up to the student of what type of education. And I've always been a proponent of looking at not the Prussian model of education, which is what we have had for the very long time, right? Kindergarten and then all the stuff that we've seen. But what I have been advocating for is much more of the German model that exists today, in which there are multiple tracks of education. So you're 14 years old. Now, most 14-year-olds don't necessarily know what they want to do for the rest of their lives. But there are, in Germany, I think 3 or 4 different tracks that exist at the age of 12 or 14. And one of which is a vocational track, in which you still get some of the components of a well-rounded education, but you focus in on vocational technologies, right? You focus in on autos, and you focus in on electrical engineering. You focus in on this or that, right? You focus in on vocational skills, okay? There's another track in which you might focus in on higher education. There's another track in which you might focus in on service industries, or another track in which you might focus in on other components of education. We don't have that ability here in the United States of America right now. We need to create that ability, but that freedom and that ability to do so only comes with what? Untethering your child's education from the state. It's just that simple. Could the state provide you with mechanisms in which, you know, you get an education? Absolutely. But if, I don't know, UTI, right? The Universal Technical Institute, right? What is their number one frustration right now? Their inability to get people in the door. Well, what if they went into a high school program or offered people at the age of 14 the ability to, one, educate themselves still in history and math and science, right? And they only spend 3 hours a day on that, and the rest of it is spent learning how to fix a motorcycle or how to fix a car or whatever have you, right? We have lost that. The inability for the arts and the sciences, especially the to the point of your wife, right? Her departments have been absolutely just gutted across this country. And I'm sure she speaks to that. You take a look at all, like when I grew up, right? We had literally an auto bay in our building, right? Where you could literally take a class and be able to fix your own car, right? You could take classes on all these things. We don't have that anymore in large swaths of American society because we have focused in on paying administrators hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for that $15,000. The amount of money that is spent on you as a student has only gone up about 5%, Pat. The administrative fees have gone up nearly 95% over the course of the last 10 years. We're not focused in on educating you, the student. We're focused in on enriching the union bosses, the administrative aspects of all of this. And has that helped? No. That was the argument of the union, right? That was the argument of the teachers' unions and the administrative departments. We need more staff to be able to handle all these situations, and we'll get great outcomes. How's that been working out? Not well at all. So I think she's hitting the nail on the head here. I really do. So, Pat, with that, your last truth or fiction for the day.
Alrighty. Truth or fiction. The Biden administration will make relations with the Middle East even worse.
Mm-hmm. Truth or fiction? I'm going to go with truth. And KY. Here's why. Because the reality of our situation is this. The president of the United States of America, okay, and I have long held this, Pat, is not just the dumbest president we have ever had, but also the most incompetent and the least understanding of foreign relations I have ever seen, at least in terms of doing right by American policy, not his own pocketbook. And on one hand, he speaks ill of Saudi Arabia, right? On the other hand, he then buddies with them and tries to browbeat them at the same time. You really think that's going to work? He doesn't know what he's doing in foreign policy. He never has. My argument with Biden is this. Whatever he is advocating for on foreign policy, we should be doing the exact opposite. Because it's always true that the exact opposite is where we should have been or what we should be doing. He's been wrong on every foreign policy issue his entire, 40, 50 years in and around Washington, D.C.? Every single time we have had a pivot point, a important point in foreign relations, he's been wrong. Let's look at this, what's going on in the Middle East right now. We have, under President Trump, one of the most historic moments in our foreign policy history. The moment in which Israel, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and some other countries normalized their relations for the first time ever. There's this summit that happened, right? He was over in Israel. Have we strengthened that bond or hurt it? I would argue, based on the information available to us out of those summits, that he has hurt these relations, not helped them. That's all you need to know from my perspective.
I would tend to agree. This is truth. As you mentioned, he spoke at the Gulf Cooperation Council, a union among Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, in the UAE. Biden told the Middle Eastern leaders that despite the absence of American soldiers participating in warfare, the United States will remain involved in the region's affairs. Let me state clearly, the United States is going to remain an active, engaged partner in the Middle East. As the world grows more competitive and the challenges we face are more complex, it is only becoming clearer to me how closely interwoven America's interests are with the successes of the Middle East. We will not walk away and leave a vacuum to be filled by China or Russia or Iran. Except what happened in Afghanistan again?
Yeah, no kidding, right?
So I can't even take him at his word. I mean, the U.S. So according to this, the U.S. spent $800 billion fighting a war between Iraq and between 2003 and 2011. And ended the dictatorship of Saddam Hussein. According to the Council of Foreign Relations, over 4,500 Americans and 100,000 Iraqis losing their lives last year and ended its invasion of Afghanistan that lasted from 2001 to 2021 at a cost of $2.3 trillion, not to mention all the stuff that was lost. So I guess my question is, how much more money are we going to spend in the Middle East? And what is it that we're going to do, and how is it going to impact relations? Because if we've learned anything over the last 20 years, they don't really want us there.
No, that's not necessarily true.
Not in the way that we've been doing it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's a fair enough characterization. Yeah. I want to be clear. They want us there. They want our dollars. They want our money.
Right.
They want us to travel there. They want our tourism dollars. They want all of those things. But they also want to be able to live in the 300s still when it comes to their theocracies and whatever you want to call them.
They really only want our money. They don't really want anything else from us.
Yeah, they don't want to engage in Western values. Okay, but they want the Western dollar. Because it enriches them, not just in oil anymore. You know, you look at Qatar, why? They basically paid off the West because the West is addicted to money. They paid off the West to get the World Cup, and then they enslaved people to build the five World Cup stadiums, right, that are coming in November. It's part of the reason why I really struggle with watching most of the World Cup come November. As a big soccer fan, right, as a big football fan, I just... It's slave labor that put this together. What was going on? So I really struggle with that. But at the same point in time, you can't have your cake and eat it too there, Biden. We're going to be an engaged partner? So what are you saying? You're not affecting any change in their policies or procedures, right? I mean, people are still being beheaded in Saudi Arabia right on the street, right? Out in the open public for what? Violating Sharia law, right? Gay people all over the Middle East are being slaughtered still. Being gay is literally illegal in these countries. Are you advocating for them to westernize their societies, or are you just hoping to God that they'll be nice to you and give them the oil that you want at a price that you would want in the future? If that is the case, then what the hell? Like, do you not understand how this works? It'll be interesting to see what happens, but I fully agree with you. I mean, this is insane. Biden doesn't get it. He never will, never has. And I would also argue surrounded himself with the dumbest people on foreign policy I've ever seen. The dumbest. John Kerry is somebody who you're listening to. Are you serious, man? Are you serious with that? And on that note, Pat, your final thoughts on today's episode.
Don't get lost. Remember who you are. No means no. And the Let's Go Brandon administration is the dumbest administration we have ever seen.
Please be smart, be safe, be kind. As always, Matthew 5:47.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.